Welcome to the Make Life Less Difficult podcast. This podcast explores what it means to make life less difficult for each other and for ourselves. We share stories of struggles and successes because we believe sharing our stories eases the difficulty of life. I'm Lisa Tilstra, your host. Let's jump into today's conversation. My guest today is Lieutenant Colonel Tony Sorella. Tony is a returning guest to the podcast, and in today's conversation, he shares insights and reflections on retiring from the United States Army after 23 years of service. On our first conversation together, it was episode 99, which was released in January of this year. Tony was looking forward toward the month of May and his official retirement ceremony. If you haven't listened to that conversation, I highly recommend it. Picking up today, Tony is now post-retirement ceremony while waiting for all the official processing of his retirement, which will still be a few months in the future. So today's conversation is about the in-between. Tony has had a long and successful career in the U.S. Army. He also comes from multiple generations of military service. What does it mean to retire from a career that has also been a lifestyle, not just for Tony himself, but also for his family? What is the impact on identity and belonging? How does one manage the in-between phase when what was is gone, but what's coming hasn't fully formed? Tony, thank you for your willingness to enter into conversation about these questions and more. I know that many will relate and be grateful to know they aren't alone in the challenging processing this type of experience brings with it. I'm especially grateful for your openness to reflect on your journey in the midst of it all. It is not easy. It's probably easier to have conversations about times like this when we have some answers and have some things figured out. It's difficult to talk about the in-between. I'm hopeful, though, that through conversation and sharing, that while others listen to this conversation, the in-between can be made just a little less difficult. If you would like to connect with Tony, his contact information is in the show notes. Tony, welcome back to the Make Life Less Difficult podcast.
Hi, Lisa. Thanks for having me back. It's a pleasure.
It's always a fun experience to say welcome back because it means you've been here before and we get to start the conversation slightly differently. The last time you were on the podcast, you were looking ahead at retiring from a 23-year career in the Army, and now you are retired.
I'm still technically in the Army. The ceremony was in May, but I don't formally leave the Army until 1 October. Okay. But for all intents and purposes, I'm like a bump on a log administratively. So it's a point where, and we talked about leaving. Now the ritual has happened, and then the departure is soon coming, looming, if you will.
So when we talked the first time, you kind of did have this before. Okay, well, let's talk again after. Right now is a little bit of a middle ground. It seems like very much in transition. So where would you like the conversation to go today?
I'm not sure. Because I think I can start and just by describing what's happened since we last spoke and the ritual that was my recent ceremony to mark my retirement. And we can go wherever the river takes us after that.
Cool. So I just want to share this before we jump in. You know, after our first conversation, there were some people that reached out and said, hey, I really resonated with Tony's journey. Other people on similar paths, similar major transitions in life and things like that. So thank you for being willing to share and have the conversations. And I know when we kind of just toss the idea of having another podcast conversation now, we toss that idea around, you were kind of like, I don't know, because it's not like a bookend, it's not super clear, and I haven't figured everything out. And to me, I think that's where the conversations are most interesting, right? Because that's the journey. And sometimes the difficulty of
the journey. And then, okay, well, how can we make these pieces of the journey that are difficult a little less difficult?
Yeah, I was hesitant when we were discussing having another conversation about it, trying to get over myself, my own imposter syndrome, right? The idea is like, well, you went on Lisa's podcast once. Okay, great. All right. Yeah. All right. I was thinking about this. What are you going to share now? Okay. All right. Beating myself up. Like, okay, well, hold on. Let's pause. You know, as you said, we spoke before, I was reflecting on a point where here's the transition. Here's what it looks like over the next few months or a year. And then what does this middle space look like right now? This churn that is, okay, we talked about it. Now you can start to feel it. And, you know, the end is coming. That formal bookend is coming soon. So I'll describe, if this works, Lisa, I'll describe what happened about 2 weeks ago and what came up for me and what it meant for me. Does that work?
Absolutely.
So as we spoke last time, my professional journey has taken me in the I've been an officer in the American Army for the last 23 years. And that has been mostly rewarding, the positive. It's taken my family all world. There's been some trauma, as you would expect, in this profession and other similar professions. But it's been generally been an incredible journey. And you know, after 20 years, you can generally say, I'm done. I've finished. I would like to retire in big, giant air quotes because I'm 45 and I have plenty of other places where I want to be of service to other people. So in American Army, we offer, or not just the Army, in the American military, we offer those people who are retiring from the service a ceremony. And it is a formal ritual to mark the end. And 2 weeks ago, at the NATO base here in Northern Italy, where I've been assigned for the last 5 years, my last assignment in the Army, we had a ceremony, my retirement ceremony. And there were friends and family and the formal ceremony with flags and anthems and gifts and people in dress uniforms, you know, very, I don't know, very militaristic in a sense, right? That's the general work. But, and even in that, it was a choice. If someone's leaving, you don't have to have the ceremony. You can say, no, thank you. And there are many that do. And that's good for them. And as I was sitting about a year ago thinking, do I want to have this? Because I know it's a ton of work, right? Invitations, access to the base, program. I mean, it's programs, music. I mean, it's gifts. It's a ton of work. And I know it's a lot of work, right? I've seen it happen in other units. And it's a big deal. So, and not only is it a lot of work, but it's really important to get it right. It's not the kind of thing you screw up, right? This is that person's last taste in that unit and their institution, be it the Army, the Navy, et cetera. And so I said, yes, I would like to have one. You know, did all the paperwork and such. We talked last time about the Army not being a place where there's a tremendous amount of choice. It's pretty much how the military works, you know, tell you what to wear, how long your hair can be, where you go, et cetera. And so I had the choice. I chose to have a ceremony to mark the end of my military service. And I also was able to shape that ceremony. Okay, can we do this instead of that? So there was, even in that ceremony, there was choice. And so friends and family came from all over Europe and the US. And it was an hour long. It was well planned, well executed. Everyone did a fabulous job. And I think if I were to, and several people have asked me, how was it, you know? And the simplest way that I can describe it is that it felt right. And then some of those feelings, there's a part where you get, if you choose to, you get to speak. And I'm not one to look for opportunities for the limelight. It's probably that sounds right, as opposed to excessive humility or something like that. So, and so what did it feel like, right? This ceremony where you have to stand up, you're celebrated, talking about your career, what you've done, where you've been. Well, it was a little weird, right? So there's this, to fully embrace being celebrated, that was a little unusual, but that was okay. And I was able to, in my speech and in other conversations, talk about the complex, you know, this mélange, this mix of emotions, right, that come up in moments like this. Sorrow, fear, but not all bad. There's some good ones. I'll put some good ones at the end. Acceptance, happiness, gratitude, a lot of gratitude, excitement, and then feeling content that this is, that we came together, there was a celebration, and it's a proper send-off, proper goodbye to say, okay, you're now, this chapter is ending. So, okay, I think I just shared a lot. And then we had a reception, which had very nice food. And then, you know, we had lots of friends and family over for a couple of days after that. So it was a nice way to mark the end of this journey.
Well, I appreciate you sharing that, Tony. And I am particularly drawn to the mix of emotions that you shared. And I think on a surface level, oftentimes we think about, oh, you're retiring and this is a celebration and this is wonderful. And it's not as straightforward as just a straight up celebration. There's complexity to it. Something is ending and there's a new phase in life that's beginning. And I think it's relatable in all sorts of situations and circumstances when we do transition, when we take a new job and make a choice to end a previous job, when we move to a new place, when we retire or change careers, or all sorts of life events that to me, there's a resonance there with what you're describing, where it is a mix of both. I mean, if we use the positive and negative terminology, even though I don't necessarily think the negative emotions are negative, it's just, you know, more of those sad-ish emotions and more of the happy-ish emotions, and both are present.
Yeah, the emotional aspect is much more challenging. I mean, there's the procedural, the process, you know, the paperwork, that stuff happens, right? It'll all happen. The emotional stuff, what came up for me when you we're talking about that was the idea of grief, right? Mm-hmm. And, you know, we'll take emotions and say, like we were talking about a second ago, this goes very cleanly in the, this is a bad feeling box, or this is a happy feeling box. And so grief, right? I remember in the part where I was standing and talking to everyone, it felt like a funeral. Mm-hmm. Because I was reminded that there are so few opportunities that when you transition, when you leave a job that you work in for 5 years, 10 years, or a community, I don't think we give ourselves a lot of space to grieve.
No.
Because we're all worried about moving houses, all the things that come from moving around and our lives changing. We're always, okay, future focus. This, I'm not going to give myself either, you know, by omitting it or being in, or intentionally not letting it happen, to grieve. And so standing in front of friends and family and talking about the past while looking towards the future, it felt a little bit like a funeral. No one died. There was no death. So that was good. Mm. Right. But it reminded me it's okay to pause and grieve.
Yes. I mean, in my own journey with grief, I can't remember which book it is that I read or what resource. But I remember coming across this idea that, you know, for the larger losses in life, i.e. a death of someone, our culture, and I'm speaking from an American culture perspective, I want to recognize that it could be broadened to more of a Western perspective because other cultures manage this differently. But from my own culture experience, we acknowledge those losses and expect people to grieve and kind of grant people permission to grieve. And yet there's so many less significant losses in life that seem like, I mean, that's just a tiny thing. You shouldn't grieve that, right? Like there's, and yet we do ourselves a disservice by not allowing ourselves to grieve the smaller losses in life because our brain doesn't necessarily like sort through emotions and say, well, this is a big one, it should take more time. This is the smaller one, it shouldn't take more. Like, and maybe like the time frame of processing these different griefs is different, but I think that there's really so much value and richness and complexity to stepping into grief in a broader sense.
And that brings me back to something we discussed before, where we were talking about sharing. The military is not an institution that's known for promoting vulnerability. And that's what I mean. Sharing mm-hmm. equals vulnerability, right? Mm-hmm. It's male dominated. Strength is cherished, revered. And there's a place for that, right? There's a need for that that's developed from cycles of challenging events, right? Whether they be conflict or preparing for it or dealing with it afterwards. Mm-hmm. There's a space for that. But even in sharing this kind of end and grieving in it and saying, I'm grieving right now. Because I think, you know, you were talking about describing different grievings in an American and Western perspective. We all have these, I guess, norms, if you will, that, okay, someone close to you has died. That means this for grieving. Right? Mm-hmm. Someone less further on in your circles of life is, okay, that means this. So, okay. And then you get the requisite support and expectations from other men, that's okay. And so you enter a space like this where you're grieving. What an opportunity to share that, especially in a space where it's not, where it's uncommon. Yeah, that thought's wandering, so I don't know where it ends.
Well, and that use of the word uncommon that you just shared, what strikes me as I sit with that is actually it's quite common. It's uncommon to talk about it. It's uncommon to express it. And I think about, I mean, I just in context of your retirement from the Army, it's very easy to just think about the congratulations side of the equation. Oh my goodness, a successful career. That's amazing. You must be so happy and proud and relieved. And oh my goodness, what an accomplishment. And it's less common to acknowledge the other side, but I think it's extremely common for us as humans to experience that other side of loss. Well, this is a loss of a lifestyle that you and your family have had for decades, and it's provided all sorts of opportunities and benefits and and so there's all sorts of endings. And I guess maybe that's the common part, is to think about the new beginning. Oh, great. Well, what are you going to do, Tony? You know, and it's much more common for us to look into the future and be like, oh, okay, what's the new beginning about? And yet there's a significant ending, and to give ourselves permission. It makes me think of the William Bridges transition model, where he really acknowledges that he's like, we don't really get to a successful new beginning unless we spend time in the ending and acknowledge it for what it is, and what is ending and what is being lost, and all of the mix of emotions. Because absolutely, you can be really proud and excited and anxious and sad and nostalgic and fearful all at the same time.
And it changes frequently. Several people. Now, how do you feel? Just wait 5 minutes and let my emotional weather vane shift, and then I'll tell you how I feel. Because like right now, I'm freaking stoked. I'm super excited. You know, 20 minutes from now, I may run across a book that reminds me of something from South Korea, or I may run into a thing that I put aside from one of the tours to Iraq, and thinking that that's okay, that's reasonable.
And even more than okay and reasonable, it is, what's the word, perhaps valuable.
Yeah, to wander through that, you know, the house that is your own emotional landscape, right? To see the dark parts, see the tidy parts, the ones that are nowhere near tidy. Yeah, but to give yourself permission to wander around in that, and then share what you see, share what you feel, share what you smell, the memories.
What do you think it is that makes it difficult to do that?
I think it's a complex mix. Some of it's cultural norms, like we were talking about before. Some of it's the, you know, the institution, whatever, however they handle this kind of thing. Because I was reminded that there are other institutions that don't mark these transitions at all. You can serve in a different military, and your departure you know, consists of your last day and a certificate, right? And, you know, an attaboy, attagirl, and okay, you're done.
Oof. Yeah.
And perhaps it's at its most basic, it's a human, we're not, to use a generalization, we're not prone to trying to sit in the moment. Like you said earlier, always future focus. What's the next challenge?
Hmm.
Right? So, I mean, to sit in the moment, you have to be comfortable with yourself, you know, whatever that means for each person, then comfortable in listening, willing, wanting to feel the range of emotions and to sit with them. I don't think it's something we do intentionally unless we're prompted to, or there's an event like this where you're kind of forced into doing it because you have to go through this ritual, you know, this event to mark it.
Hmm.
Yeah. What comes up for you in that, Lisa, in terms of what's keeping us from exploring that space?
There's a part to me that it's, I mean, what we're talking about is messy and it has less elements of control to it, right? So for me to be willing to step into this whole melange of emotions and accept that there's, I might be laughing and grateful one moment and sad and shedding a tear the next moment, it can feel out of control. And I think back to my journey of grief after losing Eric, and I remember just being shocked and amazed where one moment I would just be feeling really steady, noticing the good things in life and the people and being really grateful. And next moment, something triggering, just sadness and grief. And I would be crying and I'd be like, oh my gosh, this is like, in a way, it's exhausting.
Mm-hmm.
It can feel like a roller coaster and I don't have control. And well, I like to at least have the illusion of control. So, you know, that comes to mind to me is when I shift to, okay, well, let me focus on the future. Let me start making plans. Let me get things figured out. That feels more like I have some control. And it has on the surface level, a good feeling. And yet, I really, truly believe that there's so much depth here. And I personally think, you know, I do myself a disservice if I don't give myself permission and space to go explore the different depths. And guess what? The roller coaster goes up and it goes down. And that's actually part of the fun of a roller coaster ride. It's scary. And it's exhilarating. And I get on the ride and I start going up the hill and I think, I shouldn't have done it. What was I thinking? I didn't really want to do this, right? But then you do it and you're like, oh, it's amazing. And as much of a roller coaster ride as it can be, I know that in my own life, I have found the depth, the conversations, the people, the connections that come from being real and vulnerable with both the ups and the downs to be incredibly fulfilling and rewarding.
Yeah, that very much resonates with me. And that's when I was, you know, and I mentioned at the top about trying to get over myself, about having this conversation. I was reminded of the idea that someone else is going through this. Someone else is going through a similar transition or the exact same damn transition. They've been doing this for 20 plus years and now they're leaving and they're feeling these things. And they probably want to know, man, is this just me? Am I a soup sandwich? Or is this what everyone else goes through? And to your point about vulnerability, there is great power in sharing that because it connects, it strips away the veneer of control. It reminds us that we're all kind of stumbling through this together. Whether you want to hear or feel it or not, it's true.
Well, and to me, Tony, it's partly why I'm so grateful that you're willing to step into the conversation at this moment in time. When we first talked, I remember you said like, well, no, like I kind of envisioned, okay, finally we had the first podcast conversation, but then let's have a nice one 6-8 months down the road when I've got everything figured out. And yes, let's have that conversation as well. And yet, it's during these times of transition. I know in my own life, I've often felt really alone and nobody gets it. Nobody understands. And a significant reason behind why I do this podcast is for us to have conversations and for people to share stories of the difficult times so that other people out there realize, oh, I'm not the only one. And that, again, it doesn't change it. It doesn't make it better. It doesn't give us all the answers, but it makes the time, the space, the experience a little less difficult. And so, yeah, you know, when you reached out and were like, oh, I'm kind of interested, maybe, possibly, I'm like, yes, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah.
Well, thank you for letting me wander through this. It's been rich and rewarding. So yeah, thanks.
I also think, I mean, we've already covered a super broad spectrum of tossing out different events and life things. I also think that there's a lot of complexity around retirement that is not talked about a whole lot. And you're retiring earlier than a traditional retirement at 65 or 67 or 67 and a half, 62 and a half, depending on where you live and what the country's requirements are, right? And there's all this. I find retirement an interesting invention, even. And I'll give you a little bit of background of my perspective on this. My parents didn't retire until I think my dad was, I don't know, 84. My mom was 73, 74. They had their own business and they just kept going because they enjoyed it. And eventually it got to be too much and they decided, okay, we need to like shut her down. But they didn't have a traditional retirement. They didn't work in it for an organization that said, okay, you're done, retire, here's your pension, here's your benefits, et cetera. And so I kind of grew up with a non-conventional approach to retirement. And I think in my own life, I'm kind of like, I don't know, like I hope to keep doing stuff that I enjoy as long as I can. And I don't want to have to work, but I want to enjoy my work. And the pressures around retirement and, okay, well, now you're retired, what are you going to do? And there's more and more conversations and people are being retirement coaches and people retire, but then start a whole new career doing something else. And I think there's a lot of people in that space of post-retirement who do feel lost and alone and a lack of purpose and meaning. And so I think, you know, just to kind of bring it back to your experience of retirement, I don't have a question to toss out to you, but I'll just stop talking and see what thoughts come up for you.
Oh, so thanks for that. Two things came up. First, you talked about your experience growing up with a non-traditional view of what retirement is and what it looks like. And mine was very much the opposite. You do this thing for 20 years, like people in my family did before me. And this is the trade. You get this for that. It's very clean. It's very clear. And you can go on the interwebs and find out exactly what that means in terms of compensation, benefits, et cetera. So it was exceedingly clear. And then I was drawn to the word when you started about retirement. What are you retiring from? What are you retiring to? And then the word retire, because it's the next word that came to mind in my subconscious was retreat. Hmm. You are leaving something. You are stepping away from something by choice or by dictate that you're going to transition. Okay. All right. And then that question that you mentioned inevitably comes up. All right. What's next? You got to have it all figured out. Now you've been doing this other thing. You're super squared away. You got to have it all figured out. Sure. Yeah, and my very small voice comes in through. And says, yeah, no problem. It's going to be fine. I don't have a question either. Then that's what came up for me.
Yeah.
I guess if we're lucky enough, we're retiring into something, maybe into choice, into something that we've found that's more rewarding. We have more impact. And then ideally has less of an impact on you. Yeah.
Say more about that. I'm curious.
So I guess the conventional idea is that you're in retirement. And what does it mean? When someone says, I've retired, I'm trying to process that. So that means you have stopped working and you get to fully choose what you're doing, right? Whether that's staying at home and annoying your spouse. Bethany can't hear me at the moment, so I think I'm okay. Running joke in our house about me being home more often. Yeah, you've either chosen to, or structurally you've been told to stop. Big old red stop sign, right? All right. So what's on the back of the sign? It's usually gray, right? I mean, it's usually metal. It's usually, clean. So if you step around to the other side of that sign, you can paint it, right? You can design it because you have that choice.
I like the analogy. What are you seeing on the other side of the stop sign at this just at this moment?
Oh, in this current moment of my emotional weather vane, the winds are quite reasonable at the moment. So I'm not flipping around like something in a F5 tornado. Yeah, it's a blank canvas, really. So it's something that I can paint. And that's the exciting part, right? So I'm in a great spot. I mean, to have this much choice, this really interesting story behind me, that's part of me, and it's not going anywhere. It's there. It's in my mind. It's in my story. It's in my body in various ways. So it's, but yeah, I have a canvas, and I don't even know, as I sit here talking to you, that if I know how big it truly is or could be. And so that's fills me with a little bit of angst, but like a hell of a lot of excitement. So
that's cool. And I mean, just carrying the analogy forward, and I hope I don't come across as like too, I don't mean to come across negative. I guess like the reality part of me though thinks about friends and family who I know who are artists and who have described that moment of sitting in front of a blank canvas. And sometimes it's really exciting because there's something inside them that they know, and they're just ready to get started and put paint to canvas. And then there's times of just feeling blank, like that intimidation of, oh my goodness, it's a blank canvas. I have no idea what to put on it.
You're sitting there, someone sitting there with their oh shit face, looking at the, looking at the canvas. The canvas judging me because I haven't put anything on it yet.
Yeah.
So yeah, it can create anxiety. And I think I know what I want to put on my canvas, but that is also because of a very deliberate process to leave the Army in that institution, like years of work. And if there are others out here who are, nearing the end of their journey, doesn't have to be the Army, but I mean, something similar, then I would encourage to start looking as early as possible to limit the fear, not eliminate, but to limit the sorrow and the loss of identity, things like that. Mm. And the fear, it's not going to go away, and you don't want it all to go away, right? Because they're all those emotions we talked about, they're all legitimate and they're all there. So,
yeah. Yeah. I like that when you're talking about, looking early and exploring options. I know I've had conversations with individuals, particularly people who have had a long career in the same industry or perhaps even the same organization, and they have the sense that there's only one thing I do and that's who I am. And it's really easy to really internalize what we do into who we are. And I know I've been in conversations where I'm observing this person and I know what they do, and I'm thinking, you have so many different skills and possibilities, and yet for them it's like they're just seeing that one thing. And so it makes me think, I've had multiple conversations recently about really intentionally continuing to choose a growth mindset and the challenge of that. And even though I feel very committed to that, I can easily slip into a fixed mindset around certain things. And it's easier to have a growth mindset about some things than other things. And yeah, so I think that idea of exploring options early before you have to, because sometimes that have to spot increases our stress level, which then decreases our brain's ability to think creatively from a growth mindset. Yeah, I think that's really valuable.
I agree. And as you're describing, Matt, the three words that came to mind is get a coach, find a coach, whatever he, she, they, whatever, whoever they are from whatever background, go find someone who will give you a space to start that conversation to help you. You said, you know, talking about limiting beliefs. And I can only do that. I am this thing because I've only done this thing, right? Those, they live together. Those are blinders. Go find someone who will help you. I'm not going to take them off you, but they might help you see that they're there. And then you choose what you do with them.
Yeah, that's a nice way of phrasing that. And perhaps valuable as well to those listening who might be in relationship with someone who is in that process and maybe has blinders on. And I know I have certainly been in the space of wanting to point out, you're wearing blinders, take them off. I've wanted to help people take them off. And that's not very helpful, in fact, in most situations.
And what could be helpful is talking with them. How are you feeling? How is this for you? What's this like? Right? And just let them share. And that can be invaluable.
Mm-hmm. The space between, that's the phrase that comes up for me, right? The space between things, like to that transition. There's something difficult about it, and I'm not sure if we make it more difficult than it has to be. Maybe, I guess, I'm thinking completely out loud here of, you know, the hope of having conversations like this is, in a way, to normalize it. Mm-hmm. Back to that idea of, oh, I'm not alone. I'm not going crazy because I'm struggling, even though I think I should be celebrating and everybody's so happy for me, but I'm... Yeah. Feeling a loss. And yeah, you know, so normalizing that and saying it's challenging. Yes, it's difficult. Mm-hmm. And it's a normal part of the process.
And as you shared that, Lisa, this visual came up for me, Lisa. The, you know, you're standing, you talk about a gap, you're standing on the edge of this cliff, and there's an other, there's a something else out there, but there's the mist, right? And are we helping create the mist? Are we trying to see through the mist? Yeah, right? And so you feel very alone on that edge, looking over, trying to figure out what the hell to do next. But if you take a breath, you take a moment, you look to your left and right, and just, you know, there's mist on that side. Just, you can see the outline of another person, and then another person, right? And then same on the left side, another person. And they're standing there in the exact same, with a very similar perspective. There they stand. Looking over and man, am I the only one trying to figure out how to cross this gap? Should I cross this gap? What the hell does it look like over there? And if you look left and right, there's many people who are having the same or a very similar experience.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. And it's interesting as you describe that visual. I've had more people even pop into my mind of friends and family who are going in through transitions, and it's not a retirement, but it, again, like those feelings, like there's parallels there, there's points of connection. And yeah, it's just, I think it's so important and valuable for us to, as humans, to have these, I mean, these are the sorts of conversations that I feel like, oh, well, these are the conversations that make life a little less difficult. And it's not a quick fix. It's not a magic wand. It's just, there's other people in the mist, and it doesn't clear the mist, right? The mist is still there. It still is foggy and might be cold and dreary and not a whole lot of fun. And yet it's like, oh, well, at least I'm not the only one. I'm not out here all alone.
Yeah. Tell me how it's going. Let's talk about it. Yeah.
So as we move to close this conversation, there's a part of me that is like, oh, I just want to end it without a clear, put a bow on it ending, Tony, because we don't need that, because that's part of the whole point of the conversation, right? And and yes, you are invited back for part 3 and 4 and 5 and however many to continue the conversation, and whether you have a bookend or not, just a continuation of the conversation and the story, I think there's so much value in these spaces and these conversations, and I feel a lot of gratitude just for the mist. I like that visual, like I'm seeing it, and it's like, well, okay, yeah, it seems to me there's value add in these conversations that are in a very misty, foggy place.
Mm-hmm. I agree, Lisa, and thank you for this conversation, and we can leave it in the mist and see what comes up next.
As we officially close, I'll just ask you, so we get it on recording, if somebody listens to this conversation, this part of your journey, and wants to reach out, are you okay if people reach out, connect with you? I can put information in the show notes.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Thank you for listening to today's conversation and episode of the Make Life Less Difficult podcast. Editing is done by Joseph Burdock. Artwork is by Emma Burdock. I'd be honored if you took a moment to share this with a friend and or leave us a review. Together, I truly believe we can make life less difficult.